You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade on RadioArian.com.
That's right, believe it or not, it's already that time. Once again, the much-anticipated Church of the Lampshade show, installment number 15. You know, I keep calling it the new show, but I mean, 15 installments in, we're talking about 15 hours of recording time. I mean, at what point does it quit being the new show, and it is just simply the show? Thank you all for joining us. Of course, it is Tuesday for you listening to the show. I record this over the weekend, so it's Memorial Day weekend here in America as I record this week's Church of the Lampshade show. Of course, the centerpiece of our show is Uncooked Christianity. We'll, of course, have our Christian sermon, but as always, we do have a visit beforehand, so everybody gets something out of it, even if you don't stick around for the sermon, and quite a few people get something out of both, which is even better. Much appreciated. We got four people that have continued to support what we do. Pay those tithes, people. Come on now. Pay those. I do a whole show on paying your tithes. I remember back in the day when I used to go to church, you know, and you could tell when the coffers were getting low because you'd show up to church and be like, I wonder what the pitcher's going to do. This back before it was all cucky, you know, like when I was a kid. And you'd be like, oh, what's the sermon going to be about this way? And a whole sermon would be about pay those tithes. Yeah, I should do a whole show like that. But of course, I'm not. Supporters always much appreciated. I'm not going to sit here and rattle it all off. If you find what we're doing here worth supporting, information's at the bottom of the description page. We have snail mail. Thank goodness. We have Bitcoin. And if you, deal in another cryptocurrency, be it Ripple, Stellar, Bitcoin Cash, Litecoin, whatever, just drop me an email. I could get you an address for those two. But most people, if they do crypto, it's Bitcoin. So that's what I've got up on the description page. And like I say, of course, we have snail mail. I've got a new book, believe it or not. It's about the modern cut church. And honestly, I think it's pretty good. So, you know, if you want a copy of that, along with your support, just drop me an email note. Hey, I want a copy of the book. You'll need to do that because I haven't kept up with who I've sent copies to and who I haven't. So I think you'll like it. It'll be something I can give back in return. Oh, yeah. And before we move on, speaking of those who have sent support this week, I just want to say that to that one particular supporter, I looked at the envelope and the stamp was like the first thing. The stamp, and this is like an inside joke, so y'all bear with me, but the stamp was, it was like the first thing is like this, and I just laughed, you know, I laughed, and then I opened it up, and I'm sorry about the stamp, it's like, yeah, that's the first thing I noticed, too. I got a good laugh out of that, and believe me, there are days when I could definitely do with the good laugh. Okay, let's get off into this 15th installment of the Church of the Lampshade show this week. And as I've already mentioned, I'm recording over the weekend, so it's Memorial Day weekend here in America. For those of you who aren't in America, that's our, you know, weekend. We have a long weekend where we celebrate our fallen heroes. That's right, our heroes who gave all for our freedoms. And it's a touchy subject, it is, because when you get to the heart of the matter, I mean, you know, reality, the facts, the truth, you're really hard pressed to honestly point to any war that really was for our freedoms. I'm sorry. It's a fact. I mean, I get into it with these people sometimes on social media, which I've kind of just, I'm posting quite a bit less on Gab, as y'all have noticed through the last several shows of my Gab fatigue is really set in and dealing with these people, but I'm still out there and about, and I get back and forth with these people, and, you know, I'm a Vietnam veteran, I'll have you know, and I'm like, yeah, thank you for your service. If not for you, we would all be speaking Vietnamese now. Now, if you'll pardon me, I got to go down here to the donut shop run by the Vietnamese and buy donuts, you know, I mean, seriously, but at the same time, I understand where people are coming from. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to just, yes, the truth is the truth. But at the same time, you don't want to just be a dick to people. I mean, yeah, I saw a little story on the news, and they were talking to this woman, and her son died in one of the pointless, I think, Somalia. You know, there's so many. We have so many ongoing military conflicts over the past 20 years that it's very difficult to keep up with it. And, you know, her son died at Mogadishu, you know, the Battle of Mogadishu, in Somalia. And, yeah, of course, this old woman, she's wanting to remember her son. And, I mean, I can understand that. You know, I mean, we speak the truth, but at the same time, you don't just rub salt in people's faces. You know, I mean, people want to believe. If you have, you have to put yourself in their shoes. It's so frustrating dealing with these people. But at the same time, you have to understand. I mean, you know, you have somebody here and their child, their grown son, goes and dies in one of these stupid, pointless wars on the other side of the planet. You don't want to accept that for what it is. You want to give it some sort of meaning. You know, it's hard enough to swallow the pill of the death of a loved one like that. But, you know, you see, you don't want it to be pointless. You want to somehow attach meaning to it. You see it on other cases where people, you know, their kid gets drunk in college and you know, jumps off a balcony head first and kills themselves. And you'll see their parents on TV, you know, we want their death to have meaning. So we're going to be sure that this never happens again by having some laws passed. And it's just that need to have a loved one's death have some meaning. So, you know, they try to get a law passed to, you know, I don't know, outlaw fraternities drinking in college and balconies, you know, because they have to attach some sort of meaning to the death of their child, which in and of itself is understandable, even though standing on the outside and not dealing with that emotional aspect of it, it's just stupid. I mean, you're sitting there like, why should people not be allowed to drink in college because, you know, your kid was a dumbass and got himself killed? It's the same with this hero business. You know, you take this woman and her son went and got killed in Somalia. For some reason, nobody has any freaking idea what the reason was. I think if I remember right, we were supposed to be doing a humanitarian mission there or some shit, you know, and it turned into an utter disaster. It was completely pointless. How is, you know, you can't expect people to just accept that their kid died for nothing. You know, I mean, they've got to rationalize it away somehow. So, you know, I mean, you have to give these people kind of a break with but here's the but part. You know, so I guess you would put it as when dealing directly with these people, you have to be a little understanding. No, you really do. You have to understand they got to attach. There's just, they have to. I mean, they just literally cannot accept that their loved one died for no reason. And there's nothing wrong with being understanding of that. However, that doesn't mean, I don't believe it means that we have to go along with the charade. Why? Because until somebody points out the truth that all of these overseas endeavors are for nothing, more people are going to lose their loved ones. More mothers are going to lose their sons in pointless conflicts on the other side of the planet. In this particular news story, this poor woman, you know, her son died in Somalia. And I'm thinking, you know, and of course, she's rambling on to the quote unquote journalist about, you know, our freedoms. And he did this for our country and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I was thinking of the irony of it that, you know, now we just brought the Somalians here. You know, I mean, how do you rationalize it away as it meant something? I guess what I'm saying is you have to judge the situation. If you're dealing with somebody that really is having to put that emotional attachment there because they're personal, they have a loved one, a son, a daughter, whatever the case may be, that died in one of these pointless engagements, there's no need to rub it in their face that they died for nothing. Granted, I've been times I've been frustrated and have admittedly probably done that. But by and large, you don't need to do that. However, when you're dealing with the rest of these hero worshipers, you know, my heroes, I love my military because they're protecting our freedoms, there's nothing wrong with pointing out how asinine this is. you know, protecting our freedoms. It's all a lie. They go on these military adventures because military contractors get rich from it. The echoing big banks here, they get rich off of it by loaning the money at interest to the government to pay for these adventures. And of course, in the Middle East, when you talk about the Middle East, it benefits Israel, you know, that America is apparently now the client state of. It benefits Israel. So, yeah. There's nothing, we continue to point out the truth, but it just amazes me. This is where we get, everybody goes on about my heroes who gave the ultimate sacrifice so that we could enjoy our freedoms today. What freedoms? What exactly did they protect? And I'm, you know, obviously the Middle East adventures are just foolish. It's just complete folly, but you can continue to go back. Vietnam. They protected us so that we're not speaking Vietnamese today. The Korean War did have some meaning because had not we fought the Korean War to a stalemate and protected South Korea, we wouldn't have the top-notch dramas that I get to enjoy today. So I do actually get something of benefit from the Korean conflict. World War II, we kept Europe safe for communism. That was a grand adventure. World War I, what the hell was that even about? Does anybody know? I don't. And on and on and on. My freedoms. These wars have a lot of different reasons for being fought. But trust me, folks, your freedoms ain't it. That's just the bullshit line they tell you so that you'll keep sending your kids off to the meat grinder for their cause. Namely, usually somebody's getting really, really rich off of it. Somebody's getting filthy rich off of it. It ain't you, but they need the meat. They need the cannon fodder. They need somebody to throw into the meat grinder. And it's going to be generally for this country, poor white people, blacks, Mexicans. That's who goes in the meat grinder. Jews ain't going in the meat grinder. These rich elite white people in Washington, D.C., whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, whether they claim to be conservatives or whether they claim to be liberals, they all have one thing in common. They're all rich. They're all getting the payoffs. They're all getting the kickbacks. They're getting the lobby money. And their kids and grandkids are not going to be cannon fodder. Their kids and grandkids are not going into the meat grinder for the machine so that they can get rich. Again, that's going to be left to poor white people, predominantly from the South, blacks, and Mexicans. That's who's going into the meat grinder. None of the Bushes are going into the military, are they? None of them are. That's one of the reasons they're glad that there's not a draft, that they're not having to use a draft. They would if they had to, but they're able to do it because they've got the people propagandized to the point that they'll voluntarily toss their kids to go ruin their lives or even lose their lives completely. As long as the people are dumb enough to voluntarily keep sending their kids to be cannon fodder, to go into the meat grinder, they don't need a draft and they're glad. Last thing they want's a draft because then it becomes even more obvious. You look back at the Vietnam era, the last time we had a draft in this country, where are the Bushes? Where are the Trumps? Where are all of the Clintons? All these people that got one thing in common. Oh, I've got to have a deferment. Oh, I'll just be a community service. I'm in college. Oh, I'm in the National Guard. I am not criticizing. I'm not saying, you know, they didn't do a wise thing in avoiding a pointless, stupid conflict. But what I am pointing out is how ridiculous it is, the notion that these people never go. If there's a draft, it's obvious that they never go. It's obvious they don't believe in any of this bullshit. But since there's not a draft, they get you. They sit there and pump you up. They'll fold the flags, fly 5 million flags out here and have everybody stand and salute. And oh my gosh, my solemn, my heroes. Look, I have no problem with somebody who's lost a loved one having to attach meaning to that death. Whether it's real or not, I understand. I get it. And, you know, far be it from me to attack somebody for that. Really, I'm not a heartless person, contrary to what some people try to say. I'm a very empathetic. I really am. I'm a very empathetic person. Probably, honestly, so to a fault. There's no reason to attack somebody, but there is a reason to attack the lie in the sense that they continue to try to get other people to put their own children, to put their own loved ones, to support their own loved ones being fed to the meat grinder, being cannon fodder for a corrupt system that has nothing to do with protecting your freedoms. And honestly, it's so obvious. I mean, we bomb them there and then we bring them here. What sort of insanity is that? We bomb them there, we bring them here, and it all ends up with the destruction of the nation. Save me the lip service about protecting freedoms, because it has absolutely nothing to do with that. It's all a big lie. It's all a lie to trick people to continue feeding their loved ones, encouraging their kids to go into the meat grinder, to be the cannon fodder for corrupt systems so they can continue to get rich. That, my friends, is worth attacking. That truth is worth pointing out. Again, you don't need to rub it in someone's face who's already lost somebody and they want to justify it that way. I mean, you know, that's different. That's a personal thing. But to the rest of these hero worshipers that glorify this nonsense, we'll continue. I think it's a righteous thing to point this truth out. Everything you can do to discourage people from sending their kids to lose their lives and ruin their lives in these pointless wars is an endeavor worth undertaking. So yeah, you know, it is. It's Memorial Day. And I was sitting here before recording the show. You should see my show notes, by the way. I mean, because they're like non-existent. I mean, I write down like, you know, what show number this is. Remember to point out to people that, you know, they can send support. Recognize people that have sent support. Oh, and I forgot to mention emails there, too, if you want to give me a shout here. You know, I always enjoy conversing with y'all. And if you have a question or a comment, I'd be glad to converse with you. And if it's something that I think might apply to everybody, you know, I may even use it on the show. Now, we haven't officially brought back questions, comments, but, you know, as a feature of the show. But it's something that if I think, wow, a lot of people will get something out of this, I will use it on the show. But either way, you'll get an answer because I'll be more than happy to give you a holler back. But yeah, my show notes are a joke. I mean, there's so little written down here because I just kind of sit here and think about these things along with y'all as we record the show. But sometimes I have a thought before recording the show and it's like, that's something I really want to talk about. That's worth talking about the show. And I usually try to keep myself from thinking about it further so it can be fresh when we're doing the show. And I go in here and jot it down. And this is kind of along that lines. I was thinking about socialism. I was thinking about socialism in the context that here in America, especially, I can't speak for other nations because obviously I don't live there. But I was thinking about America and how nobody in this country really understands the concept of socialism. Even the self-avowed socialists in the Democrat Party, they don't even seem to understand the term. I don't mean the politicians that use that term as, you know, just a marketing technique to get people to support them, vote them, send them money and things such as that. But I'm talking about the rank and file Democrats that self-identify socialists. How they don't even understand the term, really, what it means. And for sure, conservatives don't understand the term. So I thought we'd discuss a bit, a little bit about a realistic look at socialism in our societies. Of course, conservatives, they claim to be, you know, dead set against socialism. You know, of course, a lot of conservatives, it's just kind of a, you know, synonym when you say conservatives. It's also boomers, so we're going to kind of lump people in here. But conservatives claim to be dead set against any kind of socialism. If you ask them, boy, they hate the socialism, but they love their Social Security, they love their Medicare. Yeah, they love those things, but they're dead set against socialism. Well, you ask them, you know, what do you mean? What do you define as socialism? And they'll, you know, when it comes down to it, they don't understand any difference between socialism and communism. To them, it's the same thing. They have a caricature painted in their mind that communism, socialism, same shit. You see their shit-tier memes on Gab, you know, and it's something along that line. You know, communists are the real Nazis, are the real Muslims, are the real socialists, are all of them gibberish nonsense. It's completely incoherent because they don't even understand the term as it applies to our society today. And much the same with the rank and file on the left. They might claim to be socialists, but they don't really even understand what that means. I mean, you take someone on the left, you know, just a rank and file person left, and they say, I'm a socialist. I'm a democratic socialist. What does that mean? Well, it boils down to it. They think it means they should get their college tuition for free. Healthcare should be free. If they have to go to the doctor, it shouldn't cost them anything. They have this notion that something else is going to pay for everything, that the government is just going to magically make everything for free. And that's not really correct either. So I thought we would. I thought it would be worthwhile really kind of bearing down and discussing socialism in and of itself a little bit with what time we've got here before we get into this week's sermon. I thought it'd be worth discussing, just trying to bear down to reality, not just a reality of what it should mean or what it can mean, but what it means in our society today. Let's take a look at socialism as far as, like, I've already kind of breached this a little bit with the rank and file left, that as far as college tuition. College tuition should be free. It shouldn't cost anything to go to college. And they miss the fact that the problem with the college tuition is that it costs so much. And colleges are subsidized by the government. So you already have some sort of twisted. You see, we already have social. Everybody sits there and says the socialists, the self-proclaimed socialists on the left, is like, they're like, we need socialism. But, you know, and the anti-socialism people on the conservative side are like, we don't want socialism in here in America. I'll fight it tooth and nail till you pry my gun from my cold dead fingers. And none of them understand that we have a form of socialism here. It's a twisted form of socialism, but we have a form of socialism here. And I guess that's kind of what I thought we would get down to today as we discuss this. So let's stick with our college tuition thing. The, say, a younger person who's just out of college, a millennial or whatever, somebody that's in college, and they look and they're right out, because say you're 28 years old, you're a millennial, you're 28 years old, you're out of college, you got a shit tier degree that, because for some reason you thought women's and African studies was going to, you know, be the fast lane to a successful life, and now you're, you know, working at Starbucks, some shitty job somewhere, and you're bitter because you're looking and you have $200,000 worth of student loan debt, and you're like, this is wrong. If we had socialism, it wouldn't cost anything to go to college. Let's take a look at that. You see, the problem isn't that college isn't free. The problem is that college costs so damn much. So why does college cost so much? Because it's subsidized. The government is subsidizing it. It's a multifaceted thing. We're going to get a little into this. Because it's, first off, it's subsidized by the government. The colleges are the beneficiaries in this case of the socialism. You see, you have a form of socialism here with the colleges. You do. You have a form of socialism. Now, the rank and file leftist doesn't see that because they're not benefiting from it, because in their mind, socialism means they benefit. And to the conservative, socialism means deadbeats benefit or something. You understand? The socialism we have here in this country benefits the banks, big corporations, the wealthy, and the wealthy gets wealthier from the socialism that we have in this country. I'm going to make this clear so everybody can understand, because I know, believe it or not, there's leftists that listen to the show. Now, granted, they listen to it hoping to find something that they can grind their teeth and hate me over, but they're listening nonetheless, so hopefully they'll get something out of this as well, even though it might be it might be unintentional on their part. Listen, so college tuition. You're out of college. You got a shit tier degree. You can't make a living. You're bitter. You're angry. And what really makes you angry isn't that you can't get a decent job with your degree. It's the fact that you have freaking $200,000 worth of student loan debt. But you see, the socialism in this case, you already have socialism. It's benefiting the college. All of these colleges receive government subsidies, and not in the way that you think. Yes, they do receive government subsidies directly. They receive support directly from the government, but that's not where the real gist of the matter here is in this case. Do you know where the big subsidy for these colleges is? That student loan you're looking at. The fact that student loan is guaranteed by the government. That's why they jack these tuitions up to the moon. If they were depending on selling you a college education based solely on your ability to pay, I mean, you could go to college this semester, but you're going to have to pay $50,000 up front to go to one semester of college. The place would be empty. There wouldn't be anybody in the damn thing, and they would go broke. Okay, so what's the answer? Debt. But at the same time, if you say, okay, I want to go, you go to a regular loan institution that handles student loans, and you say, hey, I want to go attend college. My first semester going to be $50,000. And they're going to say, okay, well, what kind of assurance do we have that you're going to be able to pay this back with interest? What can I guarantee? What's your degree in? African studies, in women's studies with a minor in social justice. And they're like, get the hell out of here because you ain't going to be able to pay this back. Once again, the colleges are empty. There's nothing there because the regular loan institutions aren't going to loan you money that they feel you ain't going to pay back. Now, I'm making a joke out of it with these joke degrees, but it even goes to regular. Hey, I'm going to get a business degree. I'm going to get an accounting degree. So you're going to become an accountant. Even with that, they're liable to look at this and go, okay, well, you're liable to come out of here with $200,000. I'm just picking a number. $200,000 worth of student loan debt. And they're like, okay, accountants right now. Well, right now there's a lot of accountants in the market and it's a pretty tough market. It's pretty stiff competition. You're only going to make X amount of dollars a year, at least for the first 5, 6, 7, 8 years. Then you, on average, probably going to make this much a year. Your ability to pay back at the interest that we want to charge you, not going to happen. Once again, you wind up with an end result that nobody's going to the college, and then these universities, these colleges fail. Now you bring in the government guarantee. It's not the government loaning you the money. It's the government guaranteeing you that you're going to make the big bank that much richer by paying that interest. I read a deal here a while back that people are having student loan debt garnished from their Social Security. That's how long this scam has been going. So it's the government guarantee. The government's not making the interest off the money. That would make it, yeah, then you could tie it directly and be like, wow, this is a scam to make the government money. No, the government's not even making you the loan. They're just guaranteeing the loan. The big bank loans you the money. And they know it's a shit tier loan. There's no way they would make that loan on their own if they were taking the risk. But you see, the government guarantees the money. And you might think, well, that's a direct benefit to the big bank. It is, but it's more of a benefit to the college because now the college can charge you that $50,000 per semester and get rich. They're getting wealthy. Their professors are idiots and they get paid huge amounts of money. They have the cutting edge equipment. They have building a new multi-trillion dollar football stadium. All of these things because they're getting rich. It's a scam. It's socialism. You're just not the beneficiary of the socialism. You as the student, you're the sheep getting sheared. You know, you're the cow getting milked because it's guaranteed. They're guaranteed to get their penny. They're guaranteed to make their money. There is a beneficiary of the socialism here. It is, in this case, the college. And to a secondary extent, the loan institution as well. But the college is the immediate beneficiary. Because the loan people, they're going to make their money. It's guaranteed. But it's also spread out over a whole lot of years. It's going to take them a while to make the money. The college benefits immediately. When you take out your student loan and you pay that $50,000 for your first semester of college, they're making that money now. So the college is the immediate beneficiary of the socialism in our example here. When you see it this way, it makes it shows you how hollow it is, too, when these self-proclaimed politicians, self-proclaimed Democrat socialist politicians say, we just want a student loan forgiveness. We want student loan forgiveness for all these students. A, they're not going to do that. Look, that's no different than when the Republicans sit there and tell their constituents they want to end abortion. They don't want to do that. They're not going to do that. And even if they did, it doesn't change the fact the colleges have already benefited. They already got their money. They're not going to give it back. If you magically got your student loan debt, quote unquote, forgiven, they're going to get that back. And what would that even look like? Let's say they did. They'd say they actually followed through. And your student loan debt now, that you get a letter in the mail, says your debt's been forgiven. You don't owe anything. And you're like, yay. But what does that mean? Well, let's be honest. They're not going to take it out of the banks. They're not going to go to the big banks and tell the big banks, yeah, you're going to eat this. No, they're going to kick in the government guarantee because they have to. They have to. It's a contract. They have to follow through. So the big banks aren't going to eat it. The college already made their money. They're not going to give it back. The big bank isn't going to eat it. They've got a contract that says they're guaranteed this. They're going to take it. The government's going to pay it. And the government's going to find a way to circle back around and get it from you. You sit there and live in fantasy world and they're going to take it from the filthy rich. They never take it from the filthy rich. Let's segue that now into flipping it on the other side. The rank and file conservatives, they don't want any socialism, but they love Social Security and Medicare. They love my big corporations because that's my free market, only it isn't. It's not the free market because they crush any sort of resemblance of competition. Can you imagine? How are you going to start something up and compete with Amazon? It's not going to happen. They will crush you. Amazon made something like, I don't know, $1 trillion or some ridiculous shit last year, and they paid nothing, nothing in taxes. The socialism in the instance here benefits the big corporations. And when you point this out, what is the rank and file conservative? So, oh, you want to tax the big corporation? No, I don't. I think big corporations shouldn't exist. I have no problem with successful businesses. I have no problem with businesses growing. I have no problem with businesses even being big. But I don't believe in corporations. It's a government-created entity to begin with when you bear down on it. You take out a company like Amazon and they go into a town. They sit there. This was a recent thing. They'll sit there and tell a handful of cities, we want to build a multi-billion dollar facility. We'll hire a couple thousand people out of it, but we want it for free. In fact, you need to give us the land, pay for the building, and guarantee us we won't pay any taxes for the next 120 years. And what do you have? You have all these cities running around kissing. You have all these cities running around kissing their ass. Yes, we'll buy the land, pay for your building, and you don't have to pay taxes for the next millennia if you'll just come here and hire 150 people. And then whoever wins that deal, yeah, they hire these people and pay them a little bit and work them like slaves, you know. Oh, wow. Woo! Winning. But there's kickback. You bet there's a kickback involved in there. One of the things that never ceases to amaze me is conservatives. Conservatives will defend big corporations to their dying to their dying breath. And they won't defend anything that might benefit the workers because that's somehow socialism. If it means wages are depressed, wages are stagnant, and wages, well, maybe, you know, but corporate profits go up, that's my free market. What are you, some kind of communist socialist? What's wrong with you? If it means those things go up and corporations cry about it, then, well, we got, you know, I'm a big corporation. Because after all, now we're told that corporations are people, which is so ridiculous. Now corporations are people, according to the Supreme Court. Corporations are people. So it doesn't matter if they buy their your politicians off so that they can continue to get more socialism benefit. They're people, and conservatives are at the forefront defending corporations as somehow being people. I remember when that ruling came down, the likes of Rush Limbaugh, Hannity, and all the rest of them were at the forefront defending corporations and defending this decision. Corporations are people, and so thus we need to defend them because, after all, corporations are people. Clown world never ceases to amaze me. Corporations are people. They will defend corporations their dying breath. Anything that might benefit workers, no. No, they're against that because it hurts my big corporations who are people too. And no doubt, corporations are conservative people. So let's bear down on a little bit more of a realistic understanding of how socialism can actually work. How socialism can work in a nation, how you can have a certain amount of socialism that actually can function. Please save me the projections of, yes, that might work, but after 125 years, it would collapse on itself. Look, any form of government you come up with is going to have a life cycle. It has a birth, it has a thriving time, and then it gets old, it corrupts, and it falls apart and dies, and something new replaces it. You are not going to come up with some sort of perfect form of government that's going to last forever. I'm sorry, that's not realistic. That's not the way it works. Any form of government you come up with is going to have a life cycle. It's going to be born, it's going to live, it's going to grow, it's going to prosper, and then it get old, it get corrupt, it dies, and then something else replaces it. This is a natural order of things, and you're not going to overturn that. Not going to overturn the natural order of things and how things operate. Any form of government you come up, so save me the projections of, yes, but look here, with what you come up with, that could only work for X amount of years and then it dies. Yes, anything you could look at your current system here and tell me that it's thriving. America, the American political system is like a corpse. It's if it was a individual person, it would be Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That people aren't even sure if she's still alive. If she's still alive, they're just kind of propping her corpse up somewhere and telling us that she's alive, but maybe she's dead somewhere just on a ventilator. I don't know. So that would be the American system right now. So let's look at how some realistic forms of socialism. Because so many people just don't have any grasp of it. Now, obviously, I come from this. This is where I think some national socialist, that's right, national socialist principles come into play. Oh, I feel the triggering from here. Look, national socialism, I've said this before, national socialism, and nobody's talking about recreating Nazi Germany in the 30s. That's retarded. National socialism is nothing more than a form of government. It's not the Holocaust, even if you believe the Holocaust. It's not the Holocaust. It's simply a form of government. So let's talk some national socialist principles, not trying to recreate Germany in the 30s. This isn't the 30s. This is a whole different time, different people. But let's use this information and talk about how some forms of socialism could work for a generation or two. Again, we're not talking about creating a government that's going to last for an eternity. That's not realistic. So, okay, let's take healthcare. Healthcare for the people. Here's the problem. Anytime you talk about a socialistic type of program that could work, you've got to start with having a nation, which means borders. A nation is the people. This is where we run afoul. We can talk about a whole lot of things, and you know, if they could get past their emotionalism, the average leftist will sit there and agree, until you get to this. This is the part where they bail on us. Can you have a system where you don't bankrupt yourself by going to the doctor? I would say yes. Yes, you can. Should the people have a right to be able, like if you're in an accident, go to the doctor and go if you had to be admitted to the hospital and it doesn't financially ruin you? Yes, I do. I believe people should have the right to that. Now, it doesn't mean you should have the right to, like, you know, a 5-star hotel suite hospital room. You might have to share the room with a couple other people with a curtain drawn around you. So be it, you're not there on vacation. You're there, you know, to get well so you can go home. But should you be able to have that? Yes, I believe you can. But you cannot if everyone else in the world can come in and take advantage of the system. Same thing with wages, the conservatives that still promote this free trade nonsense. The free trade makes everybody richer. No, it doesn't. It makes corporations richer because you cannot compete. You bring things down to the mean. Why? Because free trade involves the movement of people. Because now you're competing. You cannot have, yes, you can have free trade, say in America, you can have free trade between California and Nevada, between Texas and New York, Arkansas and Minnesota. You can have free trade because we all more or less have the same standard of living. You could have free trade more or less with a nation like Canada that has a similar wage, a similar standard of living as the United States is. You could have free trade, but you're not going to have free trade with China. They're not going to have free trade with Mexico. They're not going to have free trade with some country in Africa. Why? Because they pay like 10 cents a day. And your workers can't compete with that wage because the jobs will always flow to the lowest wage possible. Yeah, okay, say, well, yeah, but that's for grunt work. What, this is computer stuff. Fine, okay, it's not going to go to your computer job. Your tech service job isn't going to flow to somebody that makes 10 cents a day because they're too stupid to do those jobs, but it's not going to flow to you either. It'll flow to India where they'll work for, say, $10 a day, or I don't know what they make, but I'm just grabbing a number here. They'll work for $10 a day. It's always going to flow to the bottom part. It's like water is going to flow, gravity. It goes to the bottom. The wages are going to flow to the bottom. And the socialism winds up benefiting the big corporation. That's why you can't have any, you can't have that. It doesn't work. Look, to bear down on this, just to boil it down to its most basic concept, because I don't have the time to really get in any further here because we got to get into the sermon this week. But like, if you think of nothing else for national socialist principles is this, any law, any action that's taken, it's not communism. It's you own your property. And it's no law. Things such as this are allowed is weighed on the scale of, is it to the benefit of society? And you have to have a closed society, which means you have borders and you have a specific people. You have a specific people within a nation. That's what makes a nation. Now you have this closed society. Does it benefit the group? Does it benefit the nation, the society as a whole? Does Facebook buying up every competitor, every other social media company and crushing all competition, does anybody think that makes our society better? Does anybody think that benefits the people, the nation? No, nobody does. And yet it happens. It happens. You can't have, you're not going to have healthcare that doesn't bankrupt you as long as everyone else in the world can come and take advantage of that. Because it's not going to be free because you're going to pay for it. I mean, even if the government ran healthcare in a social, you know, a working social, in a, say, a national socialist principle-based country, yes, the government is going to manage it. There's going to be other people that manage it, but the government's going to oversee it. Which means there's going to be money coming out of your check. And before you conservatives knee-jerk reaction, take a look at your check. More than likely, there's healthcare premiums coming out of your check. If not directly, it's in the fact that you're not getting paid. If your company is paying $500 a month for your health insurance, they're not paying that. They're cutting your wage $500 a month to cover your health insurance. So you're already paying for the health care. You're already paying for the health care. One way or the other. The difference is, yeah, it's going to come out. So if you're like a rank and file Democrat and you're looking at my health care, my free health care, look, you're going to pay for it under any system. So it's going to come out. If you have a closed society, it's not a ridiculous amount because you can't let the rest of the world come in because they're not paying for it. You are. So now you're not only paying for yours and your fellow citizens, and it's for the better of society that all the citizens can enjoy this. You're now paying for the rest of the world. That's not sustainable. That's not sustainable in any way, shape, or form of the imagination. For you conservatives, and we've got to wrap this up. I'm really running long on this topic. But for you conservatives, corporation, at some point in time, a business, you cannot allow businesses to get so big that they can control the government. And that's where you are right now. And you're going to, you know, because then you just wind up with a socialism where the corporations are the beneficiaries. They're the socialism recipients. This is why at some point in time, the government has to say, no, we cannot allow this company. We cannot allow corporations. We cannot allow corporations that can crush any sort of competition or simply buy them out. We cannot allow companies to gain so much power that now they have undue influence over the government. They can buy, they can get away with corruption. They can buy their way out of criminal activity. You can sit there and grind your teeth about how that's not my free market all you want to, but this is reality. You have to, with some socialist principles, you stop that from happening and you actually cause the free market, as it were. Because again, national socialism is not communism. National socialism, I have no problem with people trading with one another and buying and selling and people profiting and becoming more prosperous. That's supposed to be the outcome. Because what? If the people are more prosperous, it's better for the society. It's better for the nation, the people as a whole. But you can't have that when corporations, when you can have a company like Walmart, whose business model back in the day, they've already done it now, but back in the day, they would come into a rural area and sell at a loss. They would take things in on warranty with no receipt, give people money. It didn't matter. They knew they were losing money. Their business plan, when they were growing, when they were taking over the nation, Walmart would come into a rural area and purposely hemorrhage money for 5 years. They would purposely hemorrhage money for 5 years until they ran all the small local owned businesses out of business. Once the competition was wiped out, then they jacked the prices up. And it's the same price you were always paying. It's the same price you were always paying. Now they can make the profit. There's no competition. And nobody can come back in and compete against Walmart. They've already crushed the competition. That's why you go through these small towns that, you know, 30, 40 years ago, you went through and they had a thriving square with all these different little stores, five and dime stores and different this and different that, four grocery stores, two, three, four grocery stores, whatever the case may be. And now you go through those same towns and there's one big ass Walmart at the edge of town. Everything else in town is payday loan, cash for title car loan, and boarded up windows. and you see the end result. The socialism benefited the big corporation. You have to have some sort of form of government control that doesn't allow that to happen. And we get down to it, it's going to be some form of socialism. That's the beneficiary, you know, that's where the socialism is beneficial to the free market from the other side. We're probably going to need to get into this a little further in a future show because we really, it kind of got away from me and it kind of turned into a bigger subject. And really, we could go on this whole rest of the show with this. But the centerpiece of the show is sermon. And looking at the clock now, we're going to wind up running late. The show is going to wind up running long this week. So let's go ahead and wrap that up on that note, folks. Hope you enjoyed that part of the show. We got to get in here, fill those pews. It's time for this week's sermon in the Church of the Lampshade. So get in here. I'll get my crazy old West Reverend frock coat on and top hat or whatever the case may be. We'll get this week's sermon in. The rest of you ain't sticking around for the sermon. Thank you for joining us this week. We'll talk to you next time. The rest of you get in here, fill those pews. It's time for the sermon. That's right. Time for the sermon this week in the Church of the Lampshade. So as you make yourselves comfortable here in the Church of the Lampshade, we're going to do a couple things this week. I'm not going to cut the sermon short because we went long in the other. We're just going to let the show run long and hopefully it won't mess up the radio schedule too much. But I'm not going to cut the sermon short. We're going to cover a couple of things here and we're going to go ahead and continue our Meaning of Life series in the book of Ecclesiastes. But before we do that, I thought we would also cover something else because I think it's relevant to how we go through this life right now. These trying times, speaking the truth in this world of lie, this is such a frustrating thing. I deal with this continuously. I believe it or not, there's turmoil in my heart over these things sometimes. And it's like, who hears us? You know, I mean, it seems sometimes speaking the truth is such a pointless thing, whether it's in the Word of God or just speaking the truth to the world we see around us, it can seem so pointless because nobody wants to hear it. Really, I mean, nobody wants to hear it. We sit here and we just simply point out the truth and we are denigrated for it. We are called names for it. We are demonized for it. If not literally, figuratively, they cast stones at us for it. And same with speaking the Word of God and the truth of God. We have all these people who self-proclaim to be Christians, and they hate us for speaking the truth in the Word of God because they want to believe the feel-good lie, and it can all seem so pointless. It really does. I've said this time and time again. One of the things that I really hate in life is doing things that seem like a waste of time. What's the point? Nobody wants to hear our message. They are just bound and determined to go over the abyss. And it comes down to obligation when it comes to the truth. I mean, when it comes to the fundamental, I'm not talking about trolling people for the lulz. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about when you get down to the core of the matter of, are you speaking the truth? It gets down to obligation. Let's look in the book. We're just going to read a little bit here, and then we're going to get back to our Ecclesiastes series. The book of Ezekiel. That's right. We're Old Testamenting here with this. Book of Ezekiel, chapter 33. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of thy people, and say unto them, When I bring the sword upon a land, if the people of the land take a man of their coats, of their coasts, and set him for their watchman. If when he seeth the sword come upon the land, he blow the trumpet and warn the people. Then whosoever heareth the sound of the trumpet and taketh not warning, if the sword come and take him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the trumpet and took not warning, his blood shall be upon him. But he that taketh warning shall deliver his soul. But if the watchman see the sword come and blow not the trumpet, and the people be not warned, if the sword come and take any person from among them, he is taken away in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at the watchman's hand. So thou, son of man, I have set thee a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore thou shalt hear the word of my mouth, or the word at my mouth, rather, and warn them from me. So you see, your obligation here isn't for them to hear you. Your obligation isn't for them to believe you. Their obligation isn't even for them to agree with you. Take heed of the warning. Your obligation is to speak the truth. If they refuse to listen, you're free of guilt. This is what he's saying. When you see these truths and you speak the truth, clearly, when you speak the truth, then you're fulfilling your obligation. You're warning them. You're telling them, look, here's the truth. Here's the disaster coming. Because you have to understand, you read the New Testament. When you read the New Testament, we read about the travails of the apostles at the time and at the early church. You have to understand, they had a different mission then. They were set out. Their mission was to spread the gospel to the world. This is why Paul had to be arrested and had to go to Rome, because that was the fastest way to spread the gospel through the world. Their role was to spread the gospel worldwide to as many people as possible. That's not our role, really. Not really. I mean, it's always your role to speak the truth of the gospel. This is true. But our role right now, I believe this fundamentally, our role right now is we are preparing for the judgment. The world, the sword is coming. Judgment is coming to the world. The gospel's been spread. Now we are preparing the world for the judgment that is at hand. This is an important point that bears repeating. Just as it's silly to, you know, nobody's talking about recreating National Socialist Germany from the 30s, and it's just as ludicrous to pretend that it's also 1776 and we're going to go back to the founding fathers of America time and somehow recreate that. It's also silly to act as though this is like 5-10 years after Christ is crucified and resurrected, and we have the same job as the early apostles, because we do not. We have the time of judgment. Their job was different from ours. Our job is preparing, paving the way, preparing the people and warning them of the judgment. And you have to understand, when we talk about judgment, we're not just talking about, you know, we think of judgment. We talk about the judgment, the end times. Yeah, I almost made some kind of snarky remark about the rapture. That's a rapture. Oh, my goodness. We think of, when we talk about judgment in these times, we tend to always focus on the notion that suddenly, you know, flash of light, Christ is returned. Now the whole game is over. He rolls. And that time is coming. Yes. But you have to understand that the time of judgment is upon. The judgment's already started. I mean, yes. No, I'm not saying Christ has already returned. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying the part of judgment has already started rolling out. And God's judgment, we're told in the scripture over and over again, God's judgment begins with those who claim to be his own people. He starts with those. He'll start with the out and out wicked that deny him. I mean, that's easy stuff. There, you know, he doesn't even have to put any effort into those. The judgment always starts with those who proclaim to be his own people. These so-called Christian nations that are not Christian nations, it just makes sense that his judgment begins with them. So as speakers of the truth in these nations of lies that yet proclaim to be nations of God, they claim to be Christian nations, is our role is that of the watchman, as spelled out here in our scripture we just read. Your obligation is to tell them the truth. Look, the sword of the Lord is coming. I see people on these people and their crap memes on Gab, and they're going on about God bless America, pray for our nation, pray for our leaders. You are wasting your time, because I am telling you now, God's judgment is against this country. It is coming. I'm not saying don't pray. I'm saying pray that God will, in his judgment, will remember those who are here, who are stuck in the middle of this, who do continue to earnestly seek him. God's judgment's against this country. And honestly, look at it. You know, people get triggered by, how can you say, because you're not supposed to say anything except God bless America. No, God is not going to bless America. And let's be honest here. You know, we have our own selfish motivation. Look, I'm guilty of that too. I mean, I don't want to see a complete societal collapse in the sense that, you know, I want to prosper. I want to see my loved ones prosper. I want to see those around me that I care about prosper. But the reality is, look at the nation as it stands and tells me, what part of this crap deserves God's blessing? What part? Drag queen story hours? That deserve God's blessing? Doping our kids out at 7 years old and putting them on drugs because single mom can't deal with typical boyish behavior. So we're going to medicate him and say there's something wrong in his head. And God's going to bless that? God's going to bless so-called Christian churches that do nothing but preach the same God. They don't preach the gospel of God because they don't preach the truth. They preach this other false doctrine. The doctrine of equality, the doctrine that we're all the same. There's no difference between us all. We're all like this homogenous thing when it comes to God. It's a lie. They preach a lie. God's judgment is here. God's judgment is being weighed out now. You look around this mess of society, it's starting. But somebody has to tell people the truth. Somebody has to speak the truths in this world of lies. Somebody has to preach the truth when it comes to what God has said, what God requires, what God is telling us, the truth that is right here in our scripture. Somebody has to tell them. Somebody has to speak up. Somebody has to speak these truths. It falls to you. It's your obligation. It's not your obligation for them to believe you. It's not your obligation. It's your obligation to put it there. Even if it's just one time, to put it there. Because when God weighs them out on his scales, they cannot say, nobody told us. They cannot honestly say, when God's judgment's a very final thing. And when God weighs people out, they should not be able to say no, but because that wouldn't be justice. God is justice. God is just. It wouldn't be right for them to be able to honestly say, look, nobody warned us. Nobody told us. If they had told us, if they had warned us, we would have surely, God, we would have surely turned around. We wouldn't have gone down this path of destruction. They can't say that if you speak the truth. If they attack you and ridicule you for it as they are weighed out on God's scale. And I don't just mean when this life is over. I mean in this life as well. As you see the nation and the empire collapse upon itself, as you see societal collapse that we witness every day, as we see the breakdown, they can't say nobody warned us. We've pointed out these lies. We've pointed out to them clearly. As you bring in the rest of the world, I'm not even just talking about the Word of God. I'm talking about that as well. Obviously, we're in our sermon here. But all truths, the truth is the truth. If you import the whole rest of the world, you're going to have a societal collapse. That's the truth. They refuse to listen to it and import the whole rest of the world and get a societal collapse. They can't say, nobody warned us. Same here. We speak the hard, cold truth of the Word of God. We don't sit here and tell people, just, you know, you're a great person no matter what. Because Jesus, you can do it. No, we don't preach the false doctrine of equality. We don't speak the pretty lies of the world. And that's why we're persecuted. That's your guarantee that you're kind of on the right track, is that the world doesn't accept these truths. You cannot be a Christian believer and not pursue the truth. Because they go hand in hand. Christ said he was the way, the truth, and the life. The truth, the center point. That was what he put right there. The center point, the truth. You cannot embrace the lie while still seeking the truth. It's opposite directions. You can't go north and south at the same time. You have to pick a direction, and you have to take that direction. I mean, you can't be a Christian believer. You cannot follow Christ and proclaim the lies and promote the lies. You cannot. They're in opposite directions. Your role as Christian believers, you were the watchman. I'm saying, anyway, the difference is, it's an illustration. Because in our scripture we read, this guy he's talking to is the guy. You're the watchman. This is the role I'm giving to you. I'm telling you, you as a Christian believer, the watchman is your role. And we know from the scriptures, it's never received well. I mean, the prophets were never popular guys. Well, however, the false prophets were always the popular guys. The false prophets were the ones running around going, everything's going to be great. The Babylonians are never going to conquer us, and God's going to bless America. Those are the people that are popular. The guy that says, yeah, no, we're headed for a huge downfall. There's no way God's going to bless America. God is going to judge America. That's not going to be received well. Neither is the word of the prophets ever been received well. This is the role, but that's your obligation. But remember, because it can become so frustrating, so blackpilling, just remember that it's only your role to put it out there. You don't have to convince them. God is telling you right here, it's not your role to convince them. Your obligation is just speak the truth. There it is. So that they can't say nobody warned us. When the sword comes, when God's judgment comes upon them, upon the land, upon the nation, they can't say nobody warned us. They were warned. You filled your role. God's not going to hold you responsible because you weren't convincing enough. You fulfilled your role. You gave them the truth. You spoke the truth. That's your obligation. That's as far as your obligation goes as the watchman. And if you are a Christian believer in this corrupt and wicked world, then your role is that of the watchman. Let's go ahead and get rocking here with our continuing our Meaning of Life series from the book of Ecclesiastes. The show's going to run long. I apologize for that. But I don't want to cut the sermon short because we went long in the earlier part of the show, but I think it was a discussion worthwhile having. So let's go ahead and get our scripture out. We're picking up, let me look here, my notes here. Ecclesiastes, we're starting in the book of chapter 7, rather, in the book of Ecclesiastes. And let's just rock on because we're going to do 7 and 8. And 8's a pretty short one, so we should be able to get through this fairly quickly, especially the way even how 7 is structured is pretty straightforward. A good name is better than fine perfume, and the day of death better than the day of birth. Why? Because in death, your troubles are behind you. You have to remember, the whole book of Ecclesiastes is very down to earth, a very realistic look at the world around us. Everything in the end winds up being meaningless. So in the day of death, your burdens are behind you. In the day of birth, you've got a whole life. I've always said, everybody says, I wish I could go back and be young again. And I always say, yeah, I would go back and be young again if I could take my current brain with me. If I had to go back and be young again, but I had to learn all these lessons the hard way, I had to go through all the bullshit that to get to where I'm at today the hard way again, no thanks. I've done that once. I don't want to do it again. It is better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, for death is the destiny of every man. The living should take this to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter because a sad face is good for the heart. That doesn't mean you have to go around being. It just means when you're going through troubled times, when you're going through time of sorrow, that's when you open your eyes. That's when you see the reality of the world. That's when you seek God. When things are good, when things are rocking along and man, your life is going good. It's hard. Even if you have good intentions, it's hard to seek the Lord. I can guarantee, I don't care who you are. If you have a disaster fall upon your life and you can't see any way out of it and you're just struggling day by day and you're frustrated and things such as this, you're going to seek God. You're going to, all of a sudden God gets real important. They look at regular people go through their day-to-day life, you know, that they ain't got no point in God. You know, I mean, they may be Christian. You ask them, you know, do you have a religious belief, a religious affiliation? Say, yeah, I'm a Christian. I was saved and accepted the word, accepted Christ as my Lord and Savior when I was 10 years old, and I was baptized 6 months later in the Antioch Baptist Church. Well, that's all good and fine, but they don't really think about God. And it's not that maybe they don't really believe in Jesus. They just don't have no use for him. Their life's pretty good. But when their wife dies or their father dies or, you know, some loved one dies, they go to the funeral and there's mourning and there's prayer and everybody's sitting around and look at the conversations. People will generally, you go to a funeral, you go to a funeral reception and people are talking about it and people speak in hushed tones. They're not boisterous and loud. Oh, you know, people are speaking in hushed tones and they're speaking about things of deeper meaning. You go to a party, people are just talking about bullshit. Did you see the show last night? Oh, it was so crazy. I couldn't believe they did that. They're talking about meaningless things. But when you go to the house of mourning, people are talking about things that matter. And you remember that time? It was just like yesterday when we all went down to the river, went fishing. Now we're putting him in a box and he's going in the ground. You know, we're going to be there for long. We're all getting older, aren't we? There's wisdom in the house of mourning. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. It is better to heed a wise man's rebuke than to listen to the song of fools. Like the crackling of thorns under the pot, so is the laughter of fools. This too is meaningless. Extortion turns a wise man into a fool, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Again, you might have somebody that gets a powerful position. And maybe they started off, you know, you always hear of these people, you know, they started off, you know, man, they were a man of the people, and they get more powerful and they get a higher social position, and people look up to them. And the next thing, you know, they become corrupt and they start taking payoffs. They might not call it a direct bribe. It's just, here's a donation to your special foundation. This could help out. I'm going to build you a library. I'm going to build you a monument because you've done such great things. I don't expect anything in return, but I do need a permit to build these new apartments, and it would really help if it corrupts the heart. It might even seem like a small thing, but it leads to corruption. The end of a matter is better than its beginning, and patience is better than pride. Do not be quickly provoked in your spirit, for anger resides in the lap of fools. This is very self-explanatory. You see, how many times have you gotten angry and said things that, like, later you're like, oh my gosh, I wish I hadn't have said that. Yeah. You think about people that, you know, like do get so angry, they do these road rage things. They get mad and they wind up, you know, because someone cut them off in traffic and flipped them off. Next thing you know, they chase them into a parking lot, jump out and kill them. And then the next day, I always think the next day they wake up and they're in jail and they're looking at life in prison. You know, now they're not mad. You know, they were mad at the time and it didn't matter. It's like, I'm going to kill this sumbitch. Ain't going to do that to me. Next day, they're all cooled off and now they're sitting in jail and they're like, what the hell have I done? But they were caught up in the anger. Do not say, why were the old days better than these? For it is not wise to ask such questions. Boy, this is one we all fall into, isn't it? Why did things used to be better? And the older you get, the more you fall into that. I'll sit here and say, you know, I can remember when I was a kid and things were better. But the problem with that is it's easy to romanticize that. Were they really better? You know, because as you look back on the old days, you tend to brush out. You tend to, like, you look at a picture, they'll do like one of these like bathing suit pics of some, you know, celebrity bitch, you know, and she, these are things you don't get in cuck church. You don't get messages like this. They'll have some celebrity up here, and you look at it, and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, she is so hot. She is so amazing. But then, like, you see, like, a paparazzi picture of this same woman, like, at the grocery store, and you're like, ew. Yeah, I mean, well, why? Because of the makeup. And then after they take the picture, they airbrush all her faults out. She, you know, she's had two kids. You know, if you've had two kids, you've got stretch marks. I don't give a shit. Wait, you can get your body back in shape and all of that, but you're going to have stretch marks. That's life. That's realism. You know, I mean, everything stretches and then it goes back. You've got these stretch marks on your body as a woman. That's the reality of life. That is nature. But you look at this bikini shot. She's had two kids and look at her. Not a stretch mark one. Yes, she has stretch marks. They airbrush that out. They can't cover up with makeup after they take the picture. They airbrush that out. They Photoshop it out. They make it look all nice. We tend to do that when we look back on, quote unquote, the old days. We airbrush out the ugly stuff. We airbrush out the stuff that isn't pleasant. The reality of the time. We airbrush that out in our minds and we just remember the goods and it just seems so much better. Well, yeah, in some ways it was, but it's easy to airbrush out the stuff that wasn't so great. Wisdom, like an inheritance, is a good thing and benefits those who see the sun. Wisdom is a shelter as money is a shelter. But the advantage of knowledge is this, that wisdom preserves the life of its possessor. Consider what God has done. Who can straighten what he has made crooked? When times are good, be happy. But when times are bad, consider that God has made the one as well as the other. Therefore, man cannot discover anything about the future. In this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these. A righteous man perishing in his righteousness, and a wicked man living long in his wickedness. Do not be over-righteous, neither be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? Do not be overly wicked, and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? It is good to grasp the one and not let go of the other. The man who fears God will avoid all extremes. Look, this can be hard for people to grasp. You don't want to be a fool. And you don't want to be a wicked person. You don't. You want to bring destruction on yourself. And you ultimately bring destruction on yourself, not just in the kingdom of God, not just in the life that's coming, that we're headed for, but in this life as well. It can seem like the wicked just prosper all the time, but they don't. Ultimately, they wind up miserable. They wind up destroying themselves, ultimately. But you do not want to be like a wicked person. At the same time, look, you're not Christ. There's been one guy. There's been one guy that walked this earth that was perfect, that didn't commit sin, that there was no sin found in him. And let me tell you, it ain't me. And it damn sure ain't you either. And I'm always wary when I see people who try to present themselves as though they are like that. They are like that. The more you try to overly present yourself as this high and righteous person when you're not, the more you set yourself up for a fall. There's only one person that ever walked this face of the earth that there was no sin found in him. And it ain't me. It ain't you. It ain't anybody else around you. It ain't your guy on TV. It ain't your preacher. It ain't your deacon. It ain't your family members. It ain't anybody but Jesus. So you ruin yourself because it becomes a ruination. Because you say, okay, do not be overly righteous. Well, we're supposed to strive to be righteousness. How does this make any sense? Well, let me explain it to you. If you have to understand that as long as you are in this body, you are not going to reach Christ's level. You are not going to be perfect. You are going to struggle against the sinful nature. And if you try, if your standard is, look, I mean, you should always strive to be as good a person as you can be. I'm not telling you that. You should strive to be as righteous as you can. Yes. But if you try to hold yourself to the standard of Jesus, for instance, you're going to be frustrated. You're going to ruin yourself. And what winds up happening is as you stretch that rubber band, as you try to force yourself to fit this unrealistic picture of your righteous self that you should be, the more you try to force that, I can guarantee at some point that snaps back and you're going to all of a sudden open your eyes and you're way over here at the other extreme and you're in the middle of doing something so wicked that you can't believe you're doing it. You're cheating somebody. I don't know what it is, but you will. You will wind up slingshotted over here doing some stupid ass wicked shit that you should not be doing. Why? Because you were unrealistically trying to pull yourself back over here to be more righteous than what you are capable of being. You are in this body. You are in this imperfect body in this imperfect fallen world. You are not Jesus and you are not going to be perfect. And the more you try to force yourself to do so, the more you're going to wind up with the opposite effect. We're not going to skip over the scripture because I'm assuming a lot of this stuff you know. But in the New Testament, the Apostle Paul talks about struggling with the sinful self, with the flesh. The more I struggle with it, the things I want to do, these I do not do, but that I do not wish to do, these I keep on doing. He talks about, again, this balance, this equilibrium, the struggle. It's balance. It's just the way it works, folks. And if you try to force, we talk about how nature balances things in this world, in this life, there is a balance for your life as well. And nature will keep you in that balance. And if you try to overforce it one way or the other, if you just say hell with it and you're going to be hedonistic and just, you know, whatever feels good. Well, hey, shooting up black tar heroin feels real good at the time. Let's do that. Smoking crack feels really good at the time. If it didn't, people wouldn't do it. So let's do that. Let's just be wicked. Hell, we could just look, this guy's walking down the street. He's got money. Let's shoot him in the head and take his money. You will ruin your life that way in that extreme form of wickedness. But also you can ruin your life by trying to be out of balance the other way and hold yourself to some unrealistic standard of righteousness. It'll snap back. Nature will put things back in balance and you will find yourself all over the damn place. You got to find that balance. Wisdom makes one wise man more powerful than 10 rulers of a city. There is not a righteous man on earth who does what is right and never sins. Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you. For you know in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. Amen. Isn't it amazing how we get so offended if we overhear people talking about it? You've talked about other people. All this I tested by wisdom, and I said, I'm determined to be wise, but this was beyond me. Whatever wisdom may be, it is far off and most profound. Who can discover it? So I turned my mind to understand, to investigate, and to search out wisdom and the scheme of things, and to understand the stupidity of wickedness and the madness of folly. I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap, and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. Look, says the teacher, this is what I have discovered. Adding one thing to another, to discover the scheme of things, while I was still searching, but not finding, I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all. This only have I found. God made mankind upright, but men have gone in search of many schemes. I think all that's pretty self-explanatory. I hope it is. Let's just go ahead, because I really want to get chapter 8 in, and I'm already running really long here, so let's keep on going here. Who is like the wise man? Who knows the explanation of things? Wisdom brightens a man's face and changes his hard appearance. Obey the king's command, I say, because you took an oath before God. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. Since a king's word is supreme, who can say to him, what are you doing? Now, in the context of this, think of the king as God himself, because there is kind of, you took an oath before God. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. Do not be in a hurry to leave God's presence. Likewise, who can say to God, what are you doing? You have to understand your position, whether it's somebody like you're talking about the king or you're talking about God. Are you talking about Christ? Understand that you're the lower position here. Always understand that. Whoever obeys his command will come to no harm, and the wise heart will know the proper time and procedure. For there's a proper time and procedure for every matter, though a man's misery weighs heavily upon him. Since no man knows the future, who can tell him what is to come? No man has power over the wind to contain it, so no one has power over the day of his death. As no one is discharged in time of war, so wickedness will not release those who practice it. All this I saw as I applied my mind to everything done under the sun. There is a time when a man lords it over others to his own hurt. Then, too, I saw the wicked buried, those who used to come and go from the holy place and receive praise in the city where they did this. This, too, is meaningless. When the sentence for crime is not quickly carried out, the hearts of the people are filled with schemes to do wrong. Boy, that's a biggie. There's no justice. When there's no justice, you look here and there's no justice in your crumbling society, then people are filled with all kinds of schemes. When you cannot count on the system to provide real justice, then what are you left with? I want to keep on going here. We'll get through the rest of this chapter. Although a wicked man commits 100 crimes and still lives a long time, I know that will go better with God-fearing men who are reverent before God. Yet because the wicked do not fear God, it will not go well with them, and their days will not lengthen like a shadow. Ultimately, the wicked will come to an end. It may seem like they just keep going on and on. They keep prospering. But in the end, they're going in the box one way or the other. But even in this life, in the end, they will not prosper. We've already covered it before, how we see people that it seems like they're prospering, and yet you know, there are these wicked people and they're miserable. They go through their lives miserable. They have to do all these drugs. They have to do all this because they're self-medicating, because they're so miserable in their existence. There is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Righteous man who get what the wicked deserve, and wicked men who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. So I commend the enjoyment of life, because nothing is better for a man under the sun than to eat and drink and be glad. Then joy will accompany him in his work all the days of the life God has given him under the sun. You're going through this life one way or the other. You have people that just have to be miserable all the time. You know, people like that. I mean, we all go through times when we're miserable. We all go through times when we're black-pilled, when we're just not feeling it. Trust me. We're to go through times when our faith is tried. Trust me. But in the end, I mean, we're on a linear course here, and it ends at the box. And the end of your life, the number of days you get, you have no control over. Now, you can go through this limited number of days that you've got being as miserable as possible, as just bitter, angry, and miserable as possible. Or you can try to find something to enjoy in this life. Look, I'm not going to tell you that when times are really shitty and you don't know what's in you, there's all this uncertainty and anxiety. Look, I'm not telling you to put a happy face on that when you're not feeling it. But just understand, this is all temporary. Bad times are temporary and good times are temporary. When things are good, enjoy it. If you can find a way, even in the middle of hard times, to find something to laugh about, something simple, it doesn't have to even be something complicated. It doesn't have to be the solving of the problem. Just a cup of coffee and a good dog or a quiet morning, something that you can find enjoyment out of. It's a gift from God. Enjoy it in this short number of days we get. That's why you should find some way to enjoy the moment in the work that you have to do. When I applied my mind to know wisdom, and to observe man's labor on earth, his eyes not seeing sleep day or night, then I saw all that God has done. No one can comprehend what goes on under the sun. Despite all his efforts to search it out, man cannot discover its meaning. Even if a wise man claims he knows, he cannot really comprehend it. This is life. Just about the time you think you've got it all figured out. Just about the time you think, man, I've got this down. I think I've got this figured out. It all gets flipped over. You think you understand. You don't understand it. We're told in the new script, in the New Testament, in the scripture, that we do not see clearly now, but we look as though unclearly, like through a cloudy glass, through a mirror, I believe it says, because at the time they didn't have mirrors like we have now. They had like shiny metal and things were distorted. So we look as though unclear. It's again the acknowledgement that in the limited knowledge existence we have in this life, we cannot truly grasp or understand everything that's going on. We try to understand, but you can't. You can't really grasp. We get a picture, even spiritually. We're talking about things going on in the world, spiritually, physically, politically, whatever the case, you can't understand everything that's going on. You just can't. You can try to kind of grasp it, but even if you think you do, there's going to be something that you don't get. There's going to be something that you don't understand. This is a reality of life. That's just the way the world works. Look, folks, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up on that note. Sorry for going long this week. We got to wrap it up because I'm going to totally screw up the radio schedule. So we're going to wrap up on that note. Again, thank you to those who continue to support what we're trying to do. If you want to be a part of that, I really, 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 really do appreciate it. The information's at the bottom of the show description, and I do appreciate it. Again, thank you for joining us this week. We'll be back next week. Don't forget, you can also catch me on Fridays with Sven Longshanks. We do the Daily Nationalist show. It's like a 30-minute show where we cover a news story or so. And it's a fun show. If you haven't caught that yet, you want to catch that as well. We're going to catch you next week right here on Tuesdays for the Church of the Lampshade with your host, as always, Grandpa Lampshade. We'll see you then. Be safe, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
And some days when I look into your eyes, why do I keep seeing through the past? And I'm falling down with you. Sometimes when I feel you in my arms, I can feel your sorrow through your veins, and I'll always be with you. Someone for you, so you are.